You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. Every weekday, it's Friday, July the 17th, and it's a sunny day, and I'm someone, as you can hear in my voice, of a pretty sunny disposition, and it's another classic weekend with the Irish Oaks taking place at 7:15 on Saturday evening. But to be honest, you would have to be the most hopeless optimist, a bit Panglossian even, to think that there's much joy to be had from today's news. Trainer Ed Vaughan, very good trainer, has quit, citing British Racing's prize money levels as making his future unviable. The National Trainers Federation in the UK has launched a pretty explicit broadside calling for remodeled funding, a revenue-sharing agreement with media rights holders. We're 6 weeks away from the end of the COVID emergency fixture list, and there is no sign of an agreement on what might appear from September the 1st, either in terms of fixtures or funding. The Hexham racecourse boss says it's time heads were knocked together between the tracks and the horsemen, but relations, in all honesty, have never been worse. The on-course bookmakers are frustrated, racecourses are under pressure, some more than others, owners are restless, trainers are giving up. Now, I'm joined by my friend and broadcaster Rishi Persad. Rishi, how close are we to breaking point?
I think that's the perception that a lot of people will have, Nick. I do think that because of what's happening in general in the world, that everything is heightened beyond what we would normally interpret things as. So perhaps that's something to bear in mind. But yes, because there's always uncertainty, and uncertainty is one of the hardest things to deal with. That's why when we went into lockdown back in March, a lot of people struggled because they weren't sure when we were going to come out of lockdown. Uncertainty is a thing that drives a lot of people to fear, and obviously fear then drives you into panic. And when you read the news that Ed Vaughan, a trainer who's trained a Group 2 winner in the last 10 days for one of the leading owners in Antin Oppenheimer, is going to quit because he cannot make ends meet and make the training game viable, that's a concern. When we think about owners calling for a remodeling of the funding system, when we have the fact that we don't know, as you rightly say, we're only weeks away from needing the new fixture list and not being sure where the funding is coming from, the uncertainty is going to cause all of us, at some degree, to panic. Even some of the more positive members of the racing industry will also be a bit concerned. And I do think that when something as serious as Ed Vaughan calling an end to his training career in Britain, because he has said he might do it elsewhere, where it's more viable, that is another knock on the door for people to wake up and say, hang on a second, things just aren't right.
And it hasn't taken very long for us to go from a spirit of all pulling together, we're all in this together, we're all fighting a common enemy in COVID, to being bitterly riven with argument. These two immovable forces, the horsemen, terrible name for it, the horsemen's group, but it's the name we have for it, the horsemen's group, and the racecourses, immovable objects, blunt instruments. And there's a feeling that they're not sharing the pain. And until everybody sees everybody else's numbers, no one will really know whether the pain is being shared equally.
Well, one of the things I would like to see, speaking of seeing numbers and sharing pain, is the fact that we get stories like Ed Vaughan, and he's obviously not the only trainer in the last 12 months to put his hand up and say, I can't carry on. But there ought to be some sort of audit done across the board to find out just how significant the problem is, because I don't think one trainer calling it a day is enough evidence to say that there is a terrible situation. But we get anecdotal stories all the time about how difficult it is. And it is a significant blow for the sport to know that someone like Ed's calling it a day. So I do think that maybe it is time. Well, not maybe, I'll take the maybe away. It is time for us to have some facts and figures about how difficult it is for trainers to make ends meet. And when trainers have to go into horse trading to supplement their income that they are trying to earn from being trainers, then that's a concerning situation as well. So I do think the time is right now to get on with it. Let's do an audit. Let's find out how difficult it is and for how widespread the problem is. Not just for trainers as well, but for owners, how difficult it is for them. And I know we always take the view that owners are the ones who have the leisure pound industry or support us in that manner. But it needs to be a balance sheet for them as well, jockeys, etc. It really ought to be an across the board audit, and it's time.
Is it possible that one of the solutions to racing's undermined funding model is an increase in revenue from pool betting? It was certainly mooted as one potential revenue stream by John Hughes, who we spoke to earlier in the week, Owners for Owners, with his new blueprint for the success of ownership in the UK. I've been speaking to the chief executive of Tote Group UK, Alex Frost. Alex, is it possible, is it really possible that pool betting could be the answer, or at least the partial answer, to our financial problems?
I think we're at a very early stage in the UK, but I think it is obviously the answer wherever you look in the rest of the world. We've had some nice sort of insights into that. I think World Pool was one of those where we saw pool betting really shown in a good light. Last year was 92 million in turnover. This year, that went up to 137 million. And if we can build a model around that, as jurisdictions across the world have done, then you know we got some signs of encouragement.
And you've just announced a very interesting deal between the UK Tote and the Irish Tote. Just tell us a bit more about that.
Our ambition is to increase the offering to as many jurisdictions as possible and work on a much more global basis. The idea of being privileged enough to represent 59 racecourses in the UK was a fantastic start. But working with the Irish Tote in Tote Ireland has been another great opportunity for us. As of next month, Irish customers will have the opportunity to bet directly into Tote pools and have a very joined up offering with the UK Tote. So they'll be taking advantage of the Tote guarantee, the much sort of bigger pools, the commingling, the 10 to follows, all the initiatives we've got going, new play spot apps and so on. So that's a really, really exciting tie-up with what is known to be pretty much one of the best racing jurisdictions in the world.
And one of the reasons that you got into this venture in the first instance was because you'd had so much experience of the game as an owner and also as a breeder and as a board member on Epsom Downs Racecourse. So you've seen the industry from all perspectives. What did you make of that NTF statement yesterday when Ed Vaughan retired, and this atmosphere, this febrile atmosphere that's building up between the horsemen and the racecourses?
Yeah, I think we're all struggling with the funding model. I don't think it's any secret that it's not working. And I think COVID has really brought that to a head. I think it's obviously a very fragile situation, and for the likes of the global events that we're watching around the world, when you see prize money that is tenfold ours across Asia, it's a difficult pill to swallow. But from a breeder's perspective right now, it's a brutal game. From an owner's perspective, it's equally tough. So I'm hugely empathetic towards where they sit in terms of the revenue streams. But we feel the sense of obligation to do our very best to make sure that the Tote can contribute. And, I think the signs are deeply encouraging, but we've just got to, work together. We're we're now on the board of the World Tote Association. So the UK Tote, which was, I think, largely sort of, it definitely wasn't considered with much respect before we've sort of got things together in recent years. And being on the board of the World Tote Association with the likes of Hong Kong, with the likes of Tabcorp in Australia, with the US and so on, there's a real sense of purpose around trying to deliver something that is very, very much more meaningful for the underlying sport. And that's been the tone of the World Toe Association's board meetings in recent weeks, is they are deeply aware that COVID has been devastating in its impact. But equally, places like Sweden and the States, and in fact, you know, it was only really the UK and Ireland and parts of Europe that stopped racing. So they've set a very, very strong business model. You know, Hong Kong have just posted their third biggest ever take on their season. In fact, this week on Wednesday, they posted their biggest ever take on any race meeting. So, you know, the model is working around the world, and we feel strongly that we can learn from it. But, you know, there's a lot of work to do.
Alex, this program is in part supported by the Racehorse Owners Association, and they were very keen for me to ask you about your horse, La Lune, who runs in the listed race at Newbury tomorrow.
Yeah, no, as all owners, we're very hopeful. Deluded optimism is kind of, you know, you should never take a tip from an owner, should you? So I wouldn't be asking you to back her necessarily. But yeah, she ran incredibly well up at Pontefract in the season, where she was sort of second in there. She's got her black tie. I'd say Virgin Snow, who's second in the Hoppings, and Ed Dunlop's Yard is flying at the moment, will be her principal danger. But no, we go there very hopeful. Henry Candy was very happy how she's sort of come on from Pontefract. So it's a hot little race, as it should be, being a, you know, a decent graded listed. So we're very hopeful. She's a tiny filly. She costs $2,000 as a foal. So we own her now alongside her breeders, who are a fantastic bunch in Clive and Pamela Brandon. So we'll definitely have some fun with her this season, all going well.
Yeah, some encouragingly cautious vibes there from Alex Frost about the prospect of his own horse, but more importantly for all of us, the prospects of pool betting. But it's a cultural difference, isn't it, for people in the UK to get their heads around, Rich?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know as well as I do that the tradition has been fixed odds, and in recent years, exchanges. And even exchanges took a bit of time for people to be convinced that that's what they wanted to do. That's how they wanted to spend their betting pound. And they moved away or added to the fixed odds betting with exchanges. And it is just a way that we have become used to using our punting money. And it will take time in order for people to consider and be convinced that pool betting is something that they want to be interested in.
Let's push forward positively and try and imagine a post-COVID world and what that might look like racing-wise. There's been loads of suggestions. Oaks and Derby on the same day, more Sunday televised racing, jockeys only doing one meeting a day, all sorts of learnings that we can take forward. Are any of them going to stick around?
I hope so. The jockeys at one meeting, I think, is terrific. From a well-being point of view, more than anything else, I think that the knock-on effects of jockeys having more opportunities, etc., all plays into the well-being fact. But the idea of jockeys being a bit more certain about how their day is going to pan out, and that they turn up at one meeting and they know they can be there. And I think PJ McDonald highlighted the fact that if they have families, for example, you know, they can either take kids to school in the morning or be there for kids in the afternoon or in the evening when they come home. Those things are really important. And often you hear about people saying, you know, I missed my child growing up, etc. The jockeys at one meeting, I think, is a great initiative, and I hope that stays.
I talked quite a bit with this about with Lydia yesterday, and is there not a case for a nuanced approach where you can ride in the 12:30 at Sandown and the 4 o'clock at Lingfield?
I think that's a fair possibility. It doesn't have to be black and white, one meeting and that be the end of it. But I do think that if you ride in an early race at one race course, and there's a significant portion of time between your next ride at another race course where it doesn't involve you having to rush or jump in a chopper, if that's the case, then that's a possibility. But I do like the idea of jockeys being in one place, and for their own
safety.
Peace of mind. Yes.
Mm. And
their family's peace of mind as well.
Okay, so that leads us on then to, well, that's fine in the scenario we're in at the moment. Everyone will agree to it because you've got 9 and 10 race cards and they can all make the living they want to make, and they're taking rides they wouldn't otherwise take. What about when we go back to 6 and 7 race cards? Or do we?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe in keeping with that jockeys at one meeting, 9 or 10 race cards is not such a bad thing. Why can't we have, less fixtures, more races in the long term? I think that that's a fair call to at least experiment for a little bit longer. They seem to be working fine. I mean, your days are a bit longer. I'm sure you can handle it. You got stamina. And I'm enjoying them.
Yeah, I did a 9-racer at Kempton the other night, and I've got to say the first 7 races were great. It's only when they stick the worst ones toward the very back end that it starts to drag a bit. But look, those are small problems in the grand scheme of things. Just in terms of other things you might like to see sticking around?
Well, a couple of other things I quite like. I love the fact that the Derby... I know that Cornelius has mentioned this prior to me on your podcast, but I like the fact that the Derby and the Oaks took place on the same day. I think it certainly helped the profile of the Oaks, and it's fantastic comparison. And I think the two-day meeting can remain, so you can have the Woodcut, the Princess Elizabeth, and the Coronation Cup on the Friday, and then you can have the Derby and the Oaks on the Saturday. Or you could go the first day of the meeting being on the Saturday, and you can have the Derby and the Oaks on Sunday, which leads me to the other idea of keeping good racing on a Sunday, televised racing on a Sunday.
Now, is this going to work beyond this period? Because, yes, people might watch the racing on telly on a Sunday if there are no competing attractions, and there aren't really many at the moment, sporting or otherwise. But will they turn up to the races on a Sunday? And that, of course, has been the sticking point in the past.
Well, that's the task of racecourses and the industry, to make sure that it's attractive enough to come to the races on a Sunday. I'm sure you know about the Arab race day that takes place at Newbury on a Sunday.
I hosted this day for about 12 years for racing.
Exactly.
Free entry, don't forget.
I'm sure you charged the fee there, right? But my point right, being
you would have done as well.
Okay. Well, absolutely. What is the fee for this podcast? I'm joking. The fact that they made initiatives to attract a crowd. And it was a very successful race day. Like you say, you were part of it. You must have known how successful it was. You've seen it with your own. There are ways of marketing a race day. Just requires a bit of effort, and it can be a success. How did that become such a success? Was it just because it was free entry?
Or was it because it was successfully marketed locally and there were exactly. giveaways and so forth? So what you're saying is a more creative approach to staging Sunday race days, and they may be viable as fixtures going forward.
Yeah, I think so. And I do think that it's a huge positive for the sport to have terrestrial televised racing on a Sunday. It was a gap that could have been exploited in the past. It, because of circumstance, it's been exploited now, and I think it's proved a success. So why would we give that up?
Let's talk about some of the excellent racing to come. 5 days of Glorious Goodwood not too far away, the King George not too far away. So we'll get Enable, we'll get Batash, we'll get Stradivarius, we'll get Cameco, Siskin, Circus Maximus, all in the space of 7 days.
Mm. The Sussex Stakes is really shaping up into be a fantastic race. When we did this podcast last week, you asked the question about who might be the best 3-year-old colt at a mile and beyond. And one or two people mentioned that we left out Siskin, which I can understand and I totally appreciate why they're calling he's unbeaten, of course. But I didn't think his Guineas win was as strong a piece of form as Cameco's. Well, we're going to find out when they clash in the Sussex Stakes. Fantastic that he and Cameco are going to meet. But throw in Mahatha of Marcus Tregonnings, who was mightily impressive when he won the Summer Mile at Ascot. And it really is great and encouraging. When you see something like, you mentioned the Ed Vaughan news earlier on, and you see someone like Marcus Tregonnings, who has gone through the highest of highs when he won the Derby and gone through pretty low lows in the last few years, when you consider the success he had in the early days when he was training so much for Sheikh Hamdan, and to see him back again with a very, very good horse. The talent has never left him, but the opportunity became rare for him. But now he's got another very, very good horse. I'd love to see him in the really big time once again with Mahatha.
And Mahatha, one of the fancies for the Sussex Stakes, 5 days of Goodwood and the King George, all concertina together, and more immediately, the Irish Oaks, 7:15 Saturday evening.
Yes. Rishi? Well, Lucky, you know that I've had a soft spot for Kew Gardens, and I know I'm talking about Kew Gardens here in the context of the Irish Oaks, but you know I've had a soft spot for him for a very long, long time.
Yeah.
Well, I've kind of fallen for his sister, Snow, and I'm
always dangerous when that happens.
I know, but she's living up to it at the moment. She was slow to reveal her true talent, but this season, since we've returned from lockdown, she's just got better and better, and obviously stepped up in distance last time. She won the Munster Oaks with a fair bit in hand, and I know KN Pepper obviously stands out on that run behind Magical, and she was very good at two. But I think Snow is just blossoming at the moment. And I think that she might, I kind of mooted that she might be a ledger horse later on in the season, because obviously Love will probably go, as we all know, down the Arc route. And yes, I know Aiden's got a whole bunch of colts, but seeing that it's in the blood, I'd like to see her win the Irish Oaks on the weekend and then go on and win the ledger later on. I know it's bold, but why not, eh?
Right. I know you're a man very young for your years.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Everyone thinks you're very, very young. In fact, you're not. But I hope you are as youthful, age 70, as Hong Kong-based trainer, Australian-born John Moore. Now, 70, he's going to Australia to start a new career. J.A. McGrath, formerly of the BBC and the Daily Telegraph and Sky Sports Racing, has written a wonderful article in Thoroughbred Racing Commentary charting John's life and career. And I've been talking to him about it. And I began by suggesting to him that John Moore was rather more unheralded across the world than he ought to have been.
I suppose that's because the fact that John Moore is in Hong Kong, it's a little bubble. It's not as high a profile as Europe or the States or Australia or Japan. And for that reason, I suppose his achievements are not as celebrated as possibly they could be. I mean, he was 7 times champion in Hong Kong. It's no mean feat because it's so competitive there. He won 6 Hong Kong derbies, which is the pinnacle in local racing, and he also was responsible for 8 horses of the year. So it's a pretty big CV, and it's a bulging one. And as you say, he's now starting another career in Australia.
So why is he going back to Australia, and what's he going to do?
He's going back essentially because there's a compulsory retirement age in Hong Kong. It's 70 years of age. For most people, it's 65. They extended it every couple of years for more because he was so dominant and because he was so popular and successful and great for the profile of Hong Kong. But they've actually said 70 is the limit. We're not going beyond that. For a normal trainer in that environment, 70 just about sees you out because it is stressful. It is very, very competitive. Just thrive on it. And he's looking for bigger, fresh frontiers to conquer. And he's going to Australia to join his brother Gary in Sydney. They'll take out a joint license, and it'll be very interesting to see how they get on.
And in terms of a global horse racing dynasty, the importance of continuing that will not be lost on him.
No, and he's very, very conscious, the same as Gary is, of the influence of their father, George. George was a colossus in Hong Kong. He won the title 11 out of 13 years. But more important than that, prior to that, he was probably one of the 3 highest profile, biggest, greatest jockeys in Australian history. And he went to Europe, of course, and he rode an Arc winner for Prince Ali Khan. He also he rode a Derby winner for Jim Joel and for Noel Merlis, Royal Palace. And then, of course, it was due to train for Nelson Bunker Hunt, but their relations became strained, and he drew stumps on France. He was invited to train there by Bunker Hunt, and he then discovered Hong Kong, and that was to his advantage and also to Hong Kong's.
Jim, thanks so much for sharing that with us. You can read all of Jim's article on this week's Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Jim McGrath on John Moore. And don't forget, you can catch Jim's article on Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. And it just remains for Rishi to give you a winner, which is exactly what Lydia did yesterday.
I know. I let the side down last week, Lucky. But I'm going with the stats here today. I'm going for the 240 at Beverley, the 7.5 furlong handicap, Division 1. And I'm going with a side Vincent Rod, Josie Gordon combo, Gentle Look. How's that for you?
I wondered why you were going to a small handicap at Beverly, and then when I heard Saeed bin Zarour, it suddenly all made sense. That Godolphin loyalty stretching back all those years.
Well, yeah, there's the Godolphin loyalty, absolutely, but there's also the fact that Josephine Gordon has quite a significant strike rate for Saeed bin Zarour. They operate around 30%. This horse was really progressive this time last year on turf. He's had, after he won twice at Redcar and Doncaster, he then had four runs on the all-weather and lost his way and was beaten on all four subsequent starts. But he's had a long break. He's back on turf, Josephine Gordon on board, and they found a fair week opportunity, I think, at Beverly. So he's a decent price from what I see.
And with our partners at FitzDares, if you sign up, www.fitzdares.com/luck, to a £50 stake above even money, your odds of reward will be doubled. Thank you, Rishi. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Monday with the next edition of Nick Luck Daily. Have a wonderful weekend. And don't forget, you can download us on iTunes, on Google, on Spotify, and on SoundCloud. And if you like us, please rate us, review us, and tell your friends. And we will see you on Monday. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.